It's like, I'm on drugs. I feel like fucking shit up.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we've got a super uplifting topic. We're going to talk about my mom dying and all the priests and the prayers that came along with it. It was great, everybody.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Molly Glover.
That's me, Molly Glover.
That is Molly Glover. And we are here. We've been looking at some of our old episodes, trying to see if it was time to revisit them, because we've been doing this for over a decade.
Almost 12 years, yeah.
Yeah. So we were looking and talking about doing grief beyond belief as a topic again. And wouldn't you know it, as an amazing coincidence, we weren't able to do an episode last week. And I'll tell you, one of the big reasons that we were not able to do an episode last week is because about a week and a half ago, my mother died.
Out of nowhere.
It was very sudden. My mother was 81, but she was a healthy 81. And you always know that that you're going to lose that relative. I mean, you know that you're going to lose them, but it was not at all expected. So I got to go through the experience, and still, let's not pretend it's over. Still, I'm going through the experience of grief beyond belief, of dealing with that grief, and knowing that my mom is gone. But the other thing that was tricky was my mom was a believer. She was a Catholic, not an absolutely horrible.
She was one of the good ones.
Yeah, she was a good Catholic, and she went to a hippy dippy Catholic church. And we told a lot of stories about how my parents used to go to a much more conservative Catholic church where my brother and I were baptized, but I don't ever remember going there. And apparently what happened is when my parents and a few of their friends were pulled aside by somebody in the church and encouraged to find a parish that more closely fit their values. So they weren't kicked out. They weren't told that they were no longer welcome. They were told that maybe they would be welcome more somewhere else.
Minnesota Catholics.
I'm pretty sure this is all Catholics. I feel like Minnesota got their Minnesota nice from the Catholic Church. But nonetheless, so I got to go through all the religious rigmarole. We did a full Catholic mass for my mom's funeral. And that was as a much more open and out atheist than I have been in the past. My dad died 28 years ago, and it was also a Catholic mass when my dad died. But this time I didn't really know what I was as far as religion, just that I certainly wasn't Catholic anymore. Mm-hmm. This time I was like, well, I'm a non-believer, and I'm in the front row.
Of course.
I'm in the front row. And I actually told my kids, I told Alex and Devin, because it's like, this is going to be the first Catholic mass that they've ever gone to. The first Catholic mass that they've ever gone to is their grandmother's funeral. And I'm like, look, this is going to be really boring. And I said, I will, full disclosure, when I used to go to church when I was a kid, I would fall asleep almost every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I am terrified I'm going to fall asleep in the middle of my mom's funeral.
You're not tired. You've been going through all this. There's been so much to
do.
You're exhausted by grief. It's not like you're feeling your best and you're all peppy and ready for the funeral.
Yeah. And since my mom died, I'd had really crappy insomnia. I'd slept an average of about 4 hours a night. And that's after the night that she died, where, I mean, I was in the hospital with her and I slept 2 hours that night. Between when I went to the hospital and when she passed away about less than 24 hours later. So I'm like, you're going to be bored, but you're also going to be in the front row, and people are going to be looking at you because you're the family.
Yep. They're going to look at the back of your head and they're going to be looking for anything. They're just going to be looking for it. Yeah.
And
they're bored. They're bored too.
Yeah.
Maybe not as bored, but they're also bored.
And Alex, Alex is like, oh, well, I was going to like maybe try to sneak a headphone into my ear and listen to a podcast. And I was like, you cannot do that. You cannot do that.
What? Alex, come on.
Balls on that kid.
I respect it a little bit, but I was just like, you cannot do that. You can't. Hang on.
Which podcast?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was ours. Maybe it was fine. So anyway, that's me framing up what this episode's about in the long form, and so my mom died. It was a pretty shitty week.
So you said your mom. You said your dad died. You said 28 here, but I think you said 38.
38 years ago. 38 years ago.
I thought you were young. Yeah. You were young.
I was 19. Yeah.
Yeah. Did your mom, because she lost your dad so young, did your mom have everything like ready? Like, had she put everything in? Did she have everything?
Her affairs in order.
Like, you say you knew that she wanted, you know, a full Catholic mass burial and all that. So like, did she leave a lot of that for you because she lost her husband?
Her affairs were mostly in order. She had been working on it. She'd been working through it like really recently, like within the last month. She had been working through a lot of it. She was trying to put together a funeral plan. She was, her will was fine and very well spelled out. Her medical directive was extremely clear. Mm-hmm. To the point that when what happened was, she went into the hospital and she called me and she said, you know, I'm in the hospital. It was about 6 o'clock at night. And I was like, well, do you need me to go over? And she's like, no, I was having some abdominal pain. It's not going away. So I called the ambulance and they brought me in. Usually she would call me. So it was weird that she'd call the ambulance. And she was like, they're about to take me to an MRI. I'll call you once I get back from the MRI.
Mm-hmm.
And she never called back. We tried to text her. We tried to call her. We finally got a call from the hospital cardiologist, 10:45, telling us that her blood pressure had cratered and her heart had stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And they had administered CPR and they'd managed to revive her. She never woke up after that. I never got to speak to her after that. But and when we got there, they were like, well, her healthcare directive is very clear. Mm-hmm. On extraordinary care.
Yeah.
Like, to the point that they hadn't read her healthcare directive because her blood tests had been like slightly elevated white blood cell count. But other than that, everything was fine.
Yeah.
So they were like, there's some infection here that we're trying to find, but we think we know what it is. And anyway, at some point that infection caused sepsis, and that's what eventually killed her, because they couldn't find the source of the infection, which meant they couldn't stop sepsis. So they were like, this healthcare directive is very clear. We probably shouldn't have even administered CPR.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you know what? At the point that they were doing it, they didn't know. They hadn't looked at her healthcare directive because they didn't know they had to. There is that, you know, it's at that point, they don't know that there's much wrong. They really don't know what's causing that heart condition to happen. So I was like, it's fine that they did that. But, you know, mm-hmm. we had it really in our heads as they were telling us, as things got more and more dire, you know, that if they had needed to administer CPR again, we would have been saying don't.
Right. Right.
So anything like that. So she had that. But she did not have her funeral plans completely spelled out. But she had enough of it spelled out that we knew. So we knew, like, the funeral home that she wanted to use because it was a funeral home of a friend of a family. We knew that she wanted to have her mass at the Catholic church that she went to. The hardest thing that we were trying to figure out was whether or not she had wanted to be cremated. Because
that's a big one. That's a big one.
Well, we were all about 95% certain she wanted to be cremated. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't for a long time find anything that said, I absolutely for certain want to be cremated. But we did find several brochures that said, so you want to be cremated? eventually we did find a piece of paper that said she wanted to be cremated. I'm glad we did, because we'd already made the decision to have her cremated.
At that point, that's one of those things that I really struggle with, because I think everyone in my family wants to be cremated, from my grandparents down, has always wanted that. But if someone for some reason didn't, like maybe one of my siblings secretly doesn't and has never felt like they could tell us that, and instead, but it's so hard because it's like, yeah, but like, they're not going to know,
Right.
And did you buy a burial plot? Like, did you do, you don't want to be cremated? Okay. But like, there's a lot to do to not cremate you.
Right. And she had a burial plot. She bought a burial plot when my dad died. So she had the plot right next to him. And she had, because you can bury two urns in one plot, she'd had her father buried in her burial plot already. So, once again, I think even with one urn in there, they could have put a coffin in there.
Yeah. But, I like that your grandpa's like an eternal third wheel.
Yeah.
your parents' date. Well, he's a throne.
Especially since the joke that my mom always told, my dad and my grandmother, my mom's mother, died 2 months apart. 1986 was a really shitty year for my mom. So she bought all the plots and she buried my grandmother and my dad in the same cemetery, but she specifically put her plot in the middle of them because she said she needed to be between them. But then she buried her dad in that same plot, and her dad and her mom were divorced when she was like 4. And everybody agreed that was a really good choice that they were divorced. So now her dad and her mom are buried right next to each other, which of course doesn't matter. But, in the eternal sense, there's no relevance to it at all. But it didn't make the joke nearly as funny.
Right.
So
I feel like that's, there are a lot of religions that have instructions on, what needs to happen with the body or with the service or whatever. Some people don't necessarily buy into that part of their own religion even all the time. But I feel like, some people have said that like religion is basically how we deal with the fact that we're alive and we all know that we're not going to be alive. And I've always thought there's something to that. So it makes sense that, religion would have a lot of these, death rituals, right?
Yeah,
and that might give one a nice clear idea of what they want.
Yeah,
when they die. But if you're an atheist, you don't get any of that.
You get to make your own.
Well, I mean, yeah.
But there's no prescribed.
Right. Yeah. What it means is that someone else can't guess as easily. You have a responsibility to make that known to people, and if you don't care, you kind of have a responsibility to let people know that you don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you believe, when it's over and I'm not going to be here, funerals are for the living, then you gotta let your living folks know that ahead of time so they know.
Well, I think funerals are for the living no matter what. So speaking of death rituals, and neither one of you were raised Catholic, right?
Correct. I was.
Oh, okay. Oh. So I
was Catholic until we were about 8.
Okay.
Which imprinted on me very strongly. I remember doing, my father stayed Catholic until we were about 13. I was about 13. He was excommunicated from the local Catholic church when he committed bigamy. and then he went to a new age Lutheran born again, your sins are wiped clean so long as you apologize kind of place. So
yeah, those are great.
Yeah.
So the doctor, the trauma doctor came to see us about 12:30 the day after my mom had 12:30 in the afternoon, the day after my mom had had her cardiac event,
mm-hmm.
and effectively said, she's not going to make it. Mm-hmm. He went through all the reasons and basically said, it's not imminent, but if there are people who want to see her, you need to get them here.
Yeah.
And he said, do you want the hospital chaplain to come and visit?
What hospital was she at?
She was at United in downtown St. Paul. Mm-hmm. So we said yes, because we knew that's what she wanted.
Yeah.
So the death ritual in Catholicism is called anointing. They come in and they say a prayer, and then they anoint the individual with oil. They do a cross on the forehead kind mm-hmm. of thing.
Similar to baptism. It's
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the hospital chaplain came in. I mean, he came in about a half hour later and did this really short little ritual. And you know, it was nice. It was gaudy, but it didn't feel really icky, if that's, if that's a good way to put it. You know, it was just, you know, God take Catherine into your embrace, you know, blah, blah, off he goes.
The magic words spoken, she gets to go to heaven.
Yeah. You know, hooray. Like, yeah. So, So then we had called some of my mom's friends from church. And one of them called the church, her church. And they knew her there very well.
Mm-hmm.
So later that evening, around about 5 o'clock, the priest from her church showed up, which was that, I mean, that honestly, that was great, right? She loved him. She, you know, the church was very important to him. From you know, my perspective as an atheist, thinking about right now, it doesn't matter what matters to me. It matters what matters to my mom in this moment. And even though she's not awake, they, you know, a lot of people say that people can still hear in those situations.
Yeah, absolutely. We have no way of knowing.
Right. So it's like, allow that she's got some perception of what's going on, and allow that this is an important moment. This is an important thing for her. But he does a full mass.
Now, in the hospital room.
In the hospital. Now it's shorter. He says everything super fast. So it only takes maybe 15, 20 minutes. But it's like he brought communion wafers. And
oh, shit.
There was a communion in the middle of this. And so this is where it gets awkward as an atheist, right? This priest, whom you're happy to have there.
Of course.
Is doing communion, and he's offering you a communion wafer.
And there's like, what, six of you there?
Yeah, actually, I think there were like 10 of us there. But it's not
exactly like the same as being in a service and you're just not going to get up and go. Yeah.
Right. It's not like nobody notices. Yeah. The funny thing is that in the trauma ward, they asked to keep it to three people in the ICU room at a time. Yeah. We never managed to do that.
I think a lot of the times that it's going to, that's one of those rules that's like, we can enforce this if you're going to be dicks, you know, like, so everybody be cool in here, please.
Yeah. That's kind of what the trauma nurse said. She was like, I have to tell you this.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe try to rotate through. A few of you go to the waiting room, if you'd be in here and, you know, me and my brother would rotate out whenever new people got there. And anyway, so he does this full mass and he offers communion to everybody. And it's like, you feel awkward at that
point. Yeah.
But I'm not going to take communion. I'm not.
No, your mom wouldn't want you to.
Right.
That's the thing. Your mom wouldn't want you to because she knows how you feel.
Right. So, so that's the first time I get offered communion.
Oh, God.
Over the following week. You know, and as a atheist in that situation, I guess as listeners, but, you know, what I'm kind of saying to the listeners is you get to that point and you're like, I don't want to be a dick by disrespecting their beliefs. And that's what I think I am when I take a communion wafer and shove it into my mouth because I don't believe it's anything but bread.
Mm-hmm.
And the communion wafers are nasty bread. I do not believe this is the body of Christ. I don't believe this is a representation of the body of Christ. I think the whole Christ myth is dumb.
And frankly, the person administering communion shouldn't want you to take it if you don't believe.
Right.
They shouldn't want you to be in that line or in that room taking their holy sacrament unless you genuinely believe in its veracity.
And my guess is that Father Mike, who was the one doing the last rites, probably agreed with that. He didn't know who in there was a believer and wasn't a believer, and he offered it to everyone the same. So I'm not super angry at him. He was a very kind, nice man, and recognized that. I mean, he must have been in this situation before. It can't have been the first time he administered last rites. But recognized that the family was going through a very difficult time, and that he was, in some small way, whether welcome or not, intruding on that moment, and tried to be very respectful. And I appreciate that. But as a non-believer, you get into these situations where you're just like, I don't know what to do. Because then we went to the church a couple of days later after she died, and we were like, we got to start talking about her mass. And they're saying, okay, well, what readings do you want at her mass?
Oh, God, yeah. And that's the kind of stuff I'd wondered if she'd chosen, because I know some people do choose that stuff ahead of time.
No, it was, she hadn't. And I, yeah, again, I'm not super surprised, but, you know, so the person who's trying to help us through this is saying, you know, here's, how about this one, and saying chapter and verse. And finally, I said, I'm an atheist. And you know, me and my wife are atheists. David is an agnostic. And I'm like, this is really important to my mom, and this is right. But I literally don't know the answer to this question.
Yeah, I can't guess.
I'm like, and that was, you know, I think, and the good thing is that church, they were like, well, that's fine. That's no problem. How about this? And they would read something and we'd go, yeah, that doesn't really sound like mom. And how about this? And they said the second reading didn't have to be a biblical reading. So nice. Pat chose a bunch of passages from Maya Angelou poems, because my mom loved Maya Angelou. And we found a book that had been almost highlighted to the point that there weren't any passages that were not.
That's great.
Not highlighted. And so she pulled from that. And that was, you know, the best part of the service as far as I was concerned, because it was that sounded like my mom more than the Bible did. But I found in those moments that I had to just kind of advocate for myself a little bit. And not be like, your stuff is bullshit and I hate being here.
Right.
But say, this is something where you're asking for my input and I have no input to give because I'm just not the right person.
We had a similar thing. Nick's Aunt Robin died in June of this year after a long fight against cancer. And so, but she was very Christian, Lutheran, but hippie, such a hippie.
Yeah. Real grown old.
Big time lesbian hippie energy with the Lutheran church, you know, and like, you know, feeling the spirit of the mother and all that. And so, you know, there were parts of the ceremony that felt very hippie and I could get behind him. And it was, you know, like, you know, a little almost Unitarian, if it was anything. Right.
Yeah.
But then there was, they did communion, and only Nick's mom, Heather, only Heather's family didn't go, because all the other cousins and spouses and siblings are Lutheran. They are strongly Christian. It's an important part of their lives.
My grandfather's a Lutheran minister. My cousin went
three
through.
Three of your cousins, I think. Yeah, at this point,
Went through.
And so we all just, I mean, everyone else is getting up. There are maybe a few people scattered here and there. And every time I looked over, I'm like, oh, I bet that's one of Robin's old hippie lesbian friends. Like I just feel like this is a person who's like, no, I'm a pagan. I'm not going to take communion. But it felt very conspicuous, especially because it was like, I'm here for Heather, but also Heather's family that's been my family a long time. And, you know, but also I'm not going to take communion. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not going to pray. I'm not going to bow my head. I'm not going to close my eyes. Like, sorry, guys.
Jenny, my sister-in-law, did note that the reason she didn't go up was because they were doing communion by having like a giant loaf of bread that they were just digging their fingers into and really, really, really just like fingering
in the person's mouth, and then the hand goes right back in the loaf after being in someone's mouth
and then into the next. Yeah,
it was bad.
It was a little bit graphic and gross.
You know, and I have a communion story for this, for the church, but I mean, the hard thing was it's Catholicism. There's all sorts of call and answer prayers, And I wasn't, I know all the words. I went to church for 15 years.
I still get them in my head sometimes. Yeah.
And I didn't want to sing them because I'm just like, this is wrong. This is not respectful of the people here who believe. So I didn't. And the hard thing is you're in the front row. And you get to communion. You get to communion and you're the first people that they say should come up. And me and Pat and both boys were like, no, thank you. Pat and our friend Angie actually went up because my brother and his wife weren't going to go up either. And Pat and Angie were like, fuck, then nobody in the front row is going up to get communion. Let's just go. Because most Catholic churches, it is a rule in the Catholic Church, you can't take communion if you're not Catholic.
If you haven't been baptized Catholic.
If you have not been baptized Catholic, you cannot take communion.
Yep.
And one of the ways that Cabrini is a hippy-dippy church is they don't give a fuck.
Yeah. Ooh.
Atheist, Lutheran.
Tell the Pope.
You want a piece of bread? You can have a piece of bread.
My father once told me, he was like, just so you know, because you were baptized Catholic, you can take communion anywhere. And I was like, oh, cool. I feel so special.
And I'd been baptized Catholic, so it would have been okay. But it was okay anyway.
The whole deal.
Yeah. It was okay anyway, but I'm just like, I'm not going to do it. I shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And they do bread. They do bread at Cabrini. They do baked bread. And you're talking about, and they're really careful about like the people who are doing the bread. They wear gloves. So when they're breaking the bread, and when I was a real little kid, I remember that they would take the bread and they would put it in your hand.
Yep.
And you had to take the bread and put it in your mouth.
Yeah, never in the mouth. That's not how you're supposed to do it.
And ever since COVID, when you get to the wine, if you want to do the wine, you dip the bread in the wine.
Oh, sure.
So you take your bread and you're supposed to just dip it. You're not supposed to submerge it, but you dip the bread into the wine. So they really are very careful as far as health stuff, which I thought was really neat. But I didn't take communion. But the other thing about Catholicism is all the wine and bread that is blessed must be consumed at that Mass.
Yes.
So if you're ever there at the end of the Mass, if there's like wine left in the cup, the pastor drinks it, and he doesn't drink it because he's a drunk, although maybe he is. He drinks it because it must be consumed.
Yeah.
So they're really careful about how much wine.
It's the blood of Christ, Nick.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want
to leave it around.
It's blood. If you leave it sitting around, it's going to spoil.
It can heal.
Yeah. So you drink. So he has to drink it all. And the same with the bread. The bread must all be consumed. So when they get to the end of the communion, if there's bread left, they just hand it out to people. So they handed me a piece of bread at the end of the communion. I didn't have a chance to say no. They were just like, here's a piece of bread. And they did not hand me.
They didn't say the body of Christ. They said, here's a piece of bread.
They might have said the body of Christ. I don't know. But to me, it was just like, here's a piece of bread. But it was a giant piece of bread.
Yeah.
It was like a
whole roll.
It was like a fucking roll. It was like a turkey roll sized piece of bread. And they have good bread at Cabrini. They have the recipe for bread is good. It was my favorite part of church was when we finally got to communion because I could eat. So I'm holding this handful of bread and I'm like, this is a lot of bread and you're supposed to just eat it. A couple of minutes after communion, the dregs were going to sing Parting Glass. And I was going to try and sing lead at my mom's funeral. Mm. And I was like, I do not want to tank up on bread right before I try to sing this song.
Carbo load for all that singing.
Yeah, that I'm likely to bawl through. So the next time we stood up, I took the bread that was in my hand and I shoved it in my pocket. And then I sang the song and I made it through it. I couldn't believe it. But then I bawled for about 12 minutes afterwards. And then we get downstairs later for the after bit and I put my hand in my pocket. I'm like, why the fuck is there bread in my pocket? that's right. So
the blood of Christ, the body of Christ.
I have to tell you, I was enraged and I actually had to hide your post the day when you said that your mom, when you said she's not going to make it and you posted on Facebook, she's not going to make it.
Yeah.
And the number of people who posted to you thoughts and prayers, yeah, you're in our prayers to you, Tim, you're in our prayers. And it was like, not Kathy's in our prayers or like we're praying for Kathy, but specifically for you. And I just,
yeah,
I was getting really mad because I was like, my friend is in this terrible position and he is his heart is breaking and he's in the hospital and people are fucking saying that. And if you know Tim, if you know Tim at all, if there's one thing you know about Tim, it's probably that he works at the Renaissance Festival. And if there's two things you know about Tim, the other one's probably that he doesn't believe in God and doesn't like specifically the emptiness of you're in our prayers. Like, and yeah, it just... Oh, I was just so mad that I was like, I can't, I'm going to say something and I'm going to hurt someone's feelings. So I got to not look at this post for a minute.
And that
was so mad on your behalf.
And I appreciate it. You know, the odd thing was in the moment, I was like, they're doing the best they can.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
You know, right. It's like, they don't know what to say, but they want me to know that they care.
Yeah.
And
sure.
I guess that's fine.
Later to Nick, I said, woe be unto anyone who says to me that they are praying for you or yeah, that they are praying for me. Like if I lose Nick, I was like, oh, I'm going to really ruin someone's day. Like I'm going to take it out on somebody is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So a better person than I.
I guess the lucky thing for them was I was just too emotionally exhausted to be going, please, don't pray for me.
Well, and it helps that, I mean, I guess to some degree it helps. Your mom was a woman of faith. She,
yeah,
prayer mattered to her. She prayed. So it doesn't feel as incongruous as if your mom was a strong atheist and then they were saying, you know, the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it was like, you know, it's the same thing that after she died, a bunch of people in the kindness of their hearts sent us gift baskets of food. Because that's something, you know, and when people are in a situation like this, one thing they really need is to not cook for themselves. So sure, the dregs send us a basket of chips and goodies, and another friend sent us some really delicious looking cookies that I haven't even tried to eat yet. You know, and a bunch of stuff like that. And it was all really well-meaning, but at some point I had to do a post that was like, thank you all, please stop sending us food. Please.
Like,
please.
Guess what? I don't feel like eating. And then maybe that's weird to you guys, but like, I'm not really feeling it.
It was just like, what you're doing is so kind. And I really don't want you to feel like I don't appreciate it, but I just don't need any more food. Need any more food. But you know, that was at least something that was real. You know, I mean, I've got this pile of sympathy cards next to me as we record, and so many of them are, we'll keep your family in our prayers. And I'm like, for what?
Mm-hmm.
What
the worst is over.
Yeah. Yeah. That we're going to get over the grief. Well, I mean, I guess we will eventually, but that's going to happen whether or not you pray. And you know, the mass in the hospital too. And Pat talked about this. It's like, it starts with the nice words, but then it gets into, you know, forgive her all her sins so that she may mm-hmm. be welcomed mm-hmm. into heaven. And it mm-hmm. always bugs me because they're just talking about how they're going to a feast where they're celebrating being in the presence of God. And I'm like, why is that awesome?
Yeah.
Why is that what we all want, what we want to aspire to, is celebrating that we finally get to be in the presence of God for eternity?
This life isn't enough for some people because it's not perfect, and they've been fed a story that the next one life is going to be the one.
But it sounds less perfect to me.
Yeah,
it's like, well, this life isn't that great, so let's go to one that's just boring. But at least we won't die.
Forking shirt balls.
Yeah. You know, I know it's cliche to say like, oh, you know, a celebration of life. But, you know, if the funeral is going to be anything, I feel like that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Focusing on the death part is, I mean, maybe someone's reassured by that, I guess. Not me. Not just because I don't believe, but like, I don't want to think about how they aren't, or, you know, where they might hypothetically be. I'd rather spend the time talking about them and hearing about them and hearing stories about them and
right.
you know, all mm-hmm. the things that like we can mourn that we don't have anymore. That seems like something that's more focused on the person that's not there.
Right.
The other part of it. And I know like, yeah, funerals are for the living, but like at the same time, focusing on the afterlife stuff feels more like a, you know, don't worry, everyone. Ha ha ha. Everything's going to be fine.
It's a lot of Christians specifically are really afraid of death, like really afraid yeah. of it.
I mean, it seems I'm afraid of death. I get it, but like,
yeah, I don't want to not be anymore.
I don't know. It feels, I don't know, not selfish, self-indulgent. I don't know. It's just,
yeah.
If you know, yes, the funeral is for the living, but also like why this doesn't feel like it serves the purpose of remembering the person.
Religious funerals to me have always felt like a commercial for the religion. Oh, they don't feel like a service about the person. The person is yeah. secondary. The most important thing in a religious funeral is this is why Catholicism, Lutheranism, Christianity. Yeah. Oh, this is why Christianity is tops, everybody. We live forever.
It's a sale. It's almost like they're selling the religion mm-hmm. to you. They got to do that every week. The things that were...
She died. Aren't you afraid? Yeah. That could be you. Try religion. Like
the things in the funeral that felt right to me, what they do is they have a family member start with effectively the remembrance of the loved one. So what we chose to do, I asked the Dregs if we could do Keg on My Coffin, which is a Irish mm-hmm. song about death. It's more about celebration. Mm-hmm. And we called it a celebration of life because we didn't know what the fuck else to call it, right? You know, it's like
right.
it's like everybody calls it a celebration of life, but it's realistically kind of right.
It's a good thing to call it. I love it. Yeah. I love that term.
Yeah. yeah.
So I sang this. We did this upbeat. Let's party. It's a funeral. Let's party song. And yeah. then my brother did a beautiful, heartfelt remembrance of my mom.
Yeah.
And oh look, my brother's calling me. Talk to you later, David. Anyway. and then.
What does he need?
And then the mass started.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like from that point on, the musicians at the mass were doing Catholic mass music, but my mom did music at that church for years. So all these musicians were people she'd performed with.
Mm.
And they were picking songs she loved. So that felt right. It felt mm-hmm. like this is the right thing for my mom. You know, and then we get through the readings and Pat does the Maya Angelou stuff, which again, that felt right. That was mm-hmm. the right thing for my mom. And then we get to the homily where the priest does his thing. And mm-hmm. he did a pretty good job. He knew her. And when we sat down to talk about the service, we talked about my mom a lot. And he clearly listened. And he didn't just tick off everything that we told him. He took what we told him and he built it into here's some stories nice. That I heard and here's what I'm understanding about the person that has passed away.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
then he turned it into, but you know, we should still rejoice because woo, she's in heaven. Because that's she's his job, heaven. Right? That's yeah. his job. And it, but that was like yes, she wants that, but also it wasn't right. And then we go through the service and we get to the end, and that's when I asked the Dregs if we could do Parting Glass, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to sing this song, but can you all be mm-hmm. here to back me up so when I stop singing,
yeah.
it'll still get sung?
Yeah.
And I actually asked a bunch of musicians from the Renaissance Festival, hey, if anybody's not doing anything that day, can yeah. you come out and help me get through this song? So a bunch of people that didn't necessarily know my mom showed up and sang with. And then it was over and we went downstairs and then in the church basement, they had a microphone set up and people could just get up and do remembrances.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, it's like, you kind of wish the whole service had been that, right?
I was just thinking, that's yeah. all I want. That's yeah. all I want mine to be.
That yeah. was Dave's funeral.
Was that like, was yeah. like Dave's. Yeah, yeah. Our friend Dave's funeral, memorial was held at Ground Zero. And it was basically just everybody get up and
they had a microphone on stage.
Tell a story.
The bar was serving drinks and the dance floor was, you know, the audience standing around and listening to people remembering him. And that was, that's sounds close to ideal to me.
Yeah. That was
Background Zero.
That was great. David and I just sat in the back and listened and smiled. Yeah. And Pat had told me, my mom was a big fan of the drag song Sharknado. And we had performed at her retirement home for St. Patrick's Day just a few days earlier, just the previous week.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we'd put together a set list that did not include Sharknado. And my mom was very disappointed. I was like, well, it's not really a St. Patrick's Day
song. Traditional Irish song.
Well, also, like, do the people in this retirement home know what the fuck Sharknado is, Mom? Like,
yeah, I was like, I don't know. I don't know how they'd go. So I didn't do it. And she was very disappointed. She wanted me to do Sharknado. So we performed Sharknado in the basement later.
Ah, that's great.
Because it wasn't really a funeral song, although at a different sort of service, I might have done it knowing. Yeah. That was something she loved, and we just recently not chosen to sing it for her.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm talking a lot, but it's just as you go through all of this, and there are these moments where you're like, this is great. This is great. I like this. You know, tables filled with all the stuff that was special for her downstairs. But the church part, and the only other story I'm going to tell is, you know, my kids went to this church service, right? And we get to the point. Yeah. There's a point, if you're not Catholic, where in the middle of the whole communion ritual, which takes about 12 hours, they're like, give each other a sign of peace.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going around and you know, everybody's coming and giving me a hug. And I go up to the boys and I'm like, how you two doing? And they're like, okay, I don't understand any of this.
Lucky you.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm like, there you go. That's how those people who are not raised in this feel about it. They don't understand any of it. Yeah,
you escaped.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I wonder, I was just thinking about something that was said earlier about the, you know, priests kind of having maybe their own agenda for funerals. I wonder if, because a funeral is a chance where there's going to be people that aren't necessarily members of their community. They're going to be there. Do you think they view it as like an opportunity to like make a sales pitch?
Yes.
Where they're like, it's a chance, a new audience for recruiting.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah.
Very much. Weddings too. Yep. Yeah. Weddings and funerals. They absolutely do. Because they are... I think I've told the story about going to my ex-boyfriend had a childhood friend who converted to Mormonism for the girl he met. And we went they had a Mormon wedding and half the church was not Mormon because he wasn't Mormon by birth or anything. So, and the wedding ceremony had a whole 20-minute section in the middle about how Mormonism is the only way to the true path to God and heaven and everything else. And like anybody who's not a Mormon is going to burn. Hope you guys don't mind burning. And I was like, this is a wedding and we are talking about burning in hell. Like
at least with the wedding, the people that it's about are there to like, they could stand up and be like, fuck this.
Sure.
Like with a funeral, I feel like,
It's for sure a sales pitch. It's like I said, it's the whole, this person that you know and love, or even just that you know of died.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that scary? Don't you hate thinking about that? You know, what's the best way to not worry about what happens after you die is to accept Jesus Christ. And then you know that you're going to heaven.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be afraid of this, but, you know, and that is a big part of it.
Funerals and weddings. That's when they bust out the good communion wine and the good bread.
Yeah, that's it.
They're like, lure them in, bring out the good stuff.
That's what they have to do
every other Sunday.
My grandma died almost 2 years now, and her funeral was set, her memorial service at the same place we did my grandpa's, and they're going to be interred together in their plot and everything with their cremains. And my mom and my sister got COVID 2 days before the service, and so. And I'm like, okay, well, you can't go.
Yeah.
And my mom's like, well, it's my mom's funeral. I'm like, no, I understand. But like, you can't go to her funeral with all these old people and have COVID. Like, we can't do it, Mom. And she's like, no, you're right. Of course you're right. And I was like, well, reschedule it. Her brothers refused to reschedule it.
Wow.
And they did it without us.
Wow.
My whole family was like, okay, well, if our mom can't go, none of us are going.
Yeah.
Like my brother, my other brother, his family, their kids, me, Nick. I'm like, we're not going to go if my mom can't be there. I'm going to be with my, for my mom. You know, that's my, I mean, I love my grandma, but like my mom is who needs me. And you guys are saying that you're going to just do it without her. And I honestly, like, it damaged my relationship with my uncles just enough for it's like, I just feel like I can't forgive that. That to me is like, there's only three of them.
Right.
And like, I'm like, just reschedule it. And they're like, well, if we reschedule it, we have to wait for spring. I'm like, so wait until spring.
Yeah. She's not getting it more.
It was very, I was, and so that
maybe
is,
they were in a hurry to grieve
it
or to end
really
their,
care.
To move on with their,
really
yeah,
because the rest of us didn't get to,
well,
I didn't
no,
get
I
to say goodbye to my grandma. I didn't get to have that ritual, even if it was going to be religious. I didn't get to have that moment with all my family where we all talked about her and how much we loved her and like how funny she was. And we never got to have that. She just died and then it was over.
Yeah.
And it, that to me is like, it's, and I remember my mom being like, well, you probably don't care because you're an atheist. I'm like, I do care. Like, this is a ritual. There's an important reason that we memorialize and celebrate life and like, you know, wish a person on to whatever's next, because we are all still left behind here together to talk about them and remember them, and to not get that was very frustrating.
Frustrating. It's like, I care more because the people that are left behind are what I have. And having people come up to me or writing card stories about my mom was great. And just saying, she did this thing that was really special to me. And just going, you know, I knew my mom was pretty cool. But hearing how she touched all these other lives is like, it makes me feel better about how much I like my mom. Because she was doing all these things that I didn't even know about. So it's like, taking that away is just kind of, it's kind of shitty.
It was really bad, but I'm really glad. I wish that Nick and I could have been there, but as you know, it was a very quick, short notice on things, and it didn't work out for us timing wise, but I knew you were in like going to be inundated with people to help lift you up, you know, through that. And I'm glad that there were so many people. Your mom was I only met her a few times, but she was such a fun light of a person.
Yeah.
Like she always had this little smile on her mouth. Like she was thinking of something funny that she wasn't going to tell us. And it just, I really enjoyed the few times I got to talk to her, which was never very long.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine how it must have been for people who knew her a lot, you know? And so it was.
I feel like everything that I've seen, again, you know, we only met a couple times, but everything I've seen and everything I've heard from everyone else, like the common theme is that she was a very kind person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
she absolutely was.
That's a highly undervalued thing.
Yeah.
She was.
It means a lot to a lot of people.
The other quality she had that I'm trying to do better at, because you would sit down to talk to her, and one thing she would do is tell you about all the things that she'd done with other people you knew. And she would specifically tell you about things that were happening in their lives. And she was such a good person at noticing what was going on with other people and sharing that with others. It was remarkably selfless, excuse me. And I didn't notice it as much as I should, that like for the last year and a half of her life, my two kids had started going over to her house once a week. To play games and to have lunch. And she loved that. She was just like, it was the greatest part of her week. And every time I'd get together with her, she would tell me about that, what had gone on. And it was, let me tell you about this experience. Also, here's a couple of things your kids said that they probably don't say to you that you might be interested in knowing.
Yeah.
You know, not in confidence, not in the sense that they were like, don't tell my dad this, but it's just like,
no.
They said this to me and I don't know if you know it, but maybe you want to know about it. And sometimes they were really nice things. You know, they said this about you. So the lesson that I, as an atheist, take from that is just trying to learn from what made her somebody everybody liked and trying to be a little more like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also that I, as an atheist, take is that you have to assert yourself every now and again, but also accept that, that sometimes you're going to find yourself in a religious situation and it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll hand you a great big piece of fucking bread anyway. So put it in your pocket when nobody's looking.
Steal that bread.
So anyway, this has been Geeks Without God.
Wherever Kathy is, whatever's next, she's everywhere. She's bouncing off all of us and all the different particles in the world.
Little itty bitty particles.
That's comforting.
Oh, by the way, so whenever you have to sign for somebody being cremated, by the way, this is something I didn't know. You have to sign a piece of paper that says you acknowledge that a cremation is permanent and cannot be reversed.
Oh, no. Okay, so now, you know, they always say, like, everything you have to sign and every warning or waiver is because of a lawsuit.
There was a lawsuit, yes. The other thing you have to sign is that you acknowledge that as they try as they might, they are not going to be able to get every particle of your loved one out of the cremation furnace.
You can't weigh it going in and coming out get mad that you didn't get your full body.
And like, there's no guarantee that there aren't other particles in there too.
In fact, there's a virtual guarantee there are. Virtually guaranteed that all the ashes we buried are not entirely my mother. The other thing that was funny is my mom had two artificial hips. And I asked, what happens to the artificial hips? Because they're not going to burn.
No.
Part of me was very amused by the concept that they would just leave it in the ashes. So you could shake the urn and go, tooga, 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 tooga. I thought that'd be great. But no, they remove them. And if the family doesn't want them, then they're donated to be recycled by medical supply companies.
That's great.
So I'm like, great. And then... we're like, that sounds great. And then my brother stops and says, hold on. Before we go on, I need to ask a really important question. Has anybody ever opted to keep them?
Yeah.
And the mortician said, one time.
Yeah. I would be like, those are moms. That's my mom. And those are her knees.
And I'm going to turn her hips into a lamp.
Yeah.
The coolest walking stick I ever saw was someone had a defect titanium hip ball joint
turned into
the handle of a cane, and it looks so awesome. Like, who wouldn't want to walk around with a cane and say, like, yeah, this is my dead wife's
hip. I'm just saying, my mom paid a lot of money for those knees. She's gonna want us to hang on to
Well, you might want to ask her about that. We hadn't talked to my mom about that.
It's a good thing to ask.
And she had two children. We could have each had our own hip, but we opted for no hips. So, but know that that's a choice. Know that that's a choice that you have.
But I would never have thought of that. It would never. That's really fun. All the different steel plates and now I want to know, like, if someone has permanent shrapnel, they're not going to pick through and take out
that could still be in there. So their urn's going to shake a little bit like a maraca.
Clinky, clinky.
Right. Anyway,
if I know I'm on the way out,
with a gun,
I'm gonna eat like a pound of BBs. If they ask me my last meal, I'm gonna be like,
the cremation oven into a claymore.
I want a Thanksgiving dinner, and then also I want a pound of BB pellets.
They push the drawer and you just go shunk, like the sound of like BB shifting. Yeah. Oh God.
And you can move my ashes around with a magnet, like the furry Frank mustache toy and all that. Yeah.
Pretty sure those BBs would melt in the furnace there, Nick. But anyway, it's a good idea. We've been Geeks Without God. If you've experienced loss, we feel your pain, and you're probably going to be somewhere where there's a lot of religion that might make you uncomfortable or unsure what to do. Been there. happy to talk to you about it. Reach out to me anytime you want if you find yourself in that situation. There is also a great Facebook group called Grief Without Belief or Grief Beyond Belief.
Grief Beyond Belief.
That is very helpful in situations like this because there are people that are in the same place that you are. I mean, and I know that I sit here and I go, you know, I want to believe that my mom and dad are finally together again, but they are not. Except in the cosmic sense.
I was going to say, they're as together again as they, like they're,
So it's a tough situation to be in a world that is full of believers and you're not. I know better than most right now about that. So I'm sure some of you do too. So feel free to comment, share some information in the comments on our Facebook page. Let other folks know, other geeky godless folks know that you've been through the same thing. And don't offer thoughts and prayers. No, thank you. Not interested. We've been Geeks Without God. We'll be back next week with a show that's maybe not as much of a downer. Bye.
Bye.
This just in, my mom is still dead.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Thank you for wearing a mask.